Welcome, 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 welcome back to Locked On 76ers. I'm your host, Keith Pompey. Happy Sunday to you. That's right, this Sunday is Sunday, February 23rd. I have my man Marcus Hayes with me, and we're coming up with you guys with a special Locked On Sixers podcast. What's up, Marcus? How you been, man?
Mediocre, just like those Sixers.
Ouch. Wow. Well, if you're asking, the reason why you're saying that, the 76ers lost last night 119-98 to the Milwaukee Bucks. With that, the Sixers dropped to 35-22, 9-20 on the road. 9-20 on the road. This was also their sixth straight road loss. And the thing that really stood out, there's three things. We got to talk about the main thing. We're going to talk about this. Is Ben Simmons. You know, Ben Simmons had back tightness. He didn't play in Thursday's game. He comes out. In pregame, he tells you in shoot around, you asked him, were you 100%? He said, I wouldn't play if I wasn't ready to play.
He said, he didn't say I was 100%. He said, I wouldn't be playing if I couldn't play.
So he plays. He messes up his back on the layup. He stays in for a couple minutes. He shoots a foul shot. Shortly after that, he comes out of the game. Now he's going to have an MRI tomorrow. Now, he only played, I believe it was 4 minutes and 44 seconds in the game. That's it. He played 4 minutes and 44. The Sixers, I mean, his injury, and Joel Embiid getting in foul trouble, and no one being able to stop Giannis, especially in the second half, is what doomed the Sixers. But we got to talk about Ben. I mean, what do you make of this back injury?
I think he's got a kind of a chronic back problem. I mean, it's bothered him for a couple of months now. I'm not sure, you know, sort of structurally what it looks like in there. But when you have a back problem at the age of 23, you don't not have a back problem at the age of 33. You know, so it's something that they need to monitor. It's something that should worry people going forward because he's a power player. You know, maybe this spurs him to be a little bit less contact driven and maybe a little bit more perimeter driven. So maybe it'll have unintended positive consequences for the team.
Yeah, and like you said, a couple months. I mean, we're going back several months. I mean, more than 12 months. Because here's the thing. Last year, last preseason, I remember he injured his back last preseason. He missed the final two preseasons. We're talking about not this season, y'all, the season before. And then on October the 20th, they were playing a game in Orlando, and the same thing happened where he left early in the first quarter and didn't return. And then he missed the next game. I believe they were playing Detroit. And ironically, they played in Milwaukee the next game on the road. And I remember it was a game time decision when he played. Mm-hmm. So the thing about Ben, I mean, you know, I did a radio hit last night, and a guy asked me, he said, do you think it was wise of the Sixers to play him? And the thing is, knowing how Ben is and knowing how it was last year, to me, it really, when I saw him going out there, I'm like, okay, I know I'm assuming he's healthy. You know, you just assume that because he's the type of guy, if he can play, he's going to play. He does not miss a lot of games.
Right.
But, you know, right now, looking forward, like you said, a chronic back injury. I mean, you look at it now and you're saying the Sixers, okay, is it time for us to try to get a free agent point guard? You know,
Don't even get me started. 4 years ago, my solution to speeding the process up was to trade Nerlens Noel for Sean Livingston, mm-hmm. who was going to be a free agent after that season. They still have not had a real legitimate starting point guard in Philadelphia since the beginning of the process, because Michael Carter-Williams really wasn't. Ben Simmons certainly isn't. He's a converted point guard. He's a converted power forward. And Ish Smith, who's probably been their best true point guard, is Ish Smith. So my contention has been that my greatest problem with Sam Hinkie was he sabotaged the process going forward because he didn't have a real point guard, just a veteran point guard. Not, it didn't have to be Chris Paul, just a veteran point guard who understood, number one, how to act in the locker room with the officials, how to act with the clubbies, how to act with the people at the arena, how to show up for, you know, the plane on time, that sort of thing, number one. Number two, I think at that point they were trying to develop Jahlil Okafor. And they didn't. They couldn't. They couldn't develop Jahlil Okafor because they didn't have a point guard. And they didn't have a point guard on purpose. They couldn't develop Nerlens Noel because they didn't have a point guard. And that, to me, sabotages the process. You can't waste developmental years. You can't just say, I'm going to lose 4 years in a row because we don't have enough, quote-unquote, assets yet. At some point, to me, it's immediately, as soon as Nerlens Noel was healthy, you have got to start developing him. And they never did. So here we are now, again, no viable backup point guard. No true point guard on the team. They just don't have them, you know? Raul Neto is not a point guard in the NBA. He's just not. So that said, you know, they're trying to piece together backup point guard minutes. Again, we're 7 years into the process. 7 years, you know? And, you know, it's kind of funny. In San Antonio, where Brett Brown coached in the NBA, they had several guys who could kind of play backup point guard, and they had a true point guard, a Hall of Fame true point guard, Tony Parker. How are you going to win without a point guard? You know? How are you going to do it? You just can't do it. So I know it's kind of a, you know, rambling, you know, diatribe, but the point is, this is the NBA. You got to have somebody who can handle the ball, distribute the ball, make decisions, lead the team. You know, they don't.
Yeah, I mean, so you're saying they got to go get one, especially now.
There's nobody to get. You know, they are who they are. They are what they are.
You don't think Isaiah Thomas, I know, could help him, IT?
I don't think so. I don't consider him to be the kind of point guard you need. Number one, he's ball dominant, you know, mm-hmm. and he's a gunner. And he's not the kind of leader or distributor, and I don't think he understands the game the way you need to understand the game as a true point guard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think Ben's probably a better true point guard than he is, even though he doesn't shoot. So, no, I mean, they cast this die going into this season, and it's something you probably weren't going to get back. And I don't think Brett and his staff and Elton Brand, Brett Brown the coach and Elton Brand the general manager, I don't think they see the value and having a true point guard. And that astonishes me. And one of the issues I think they're scared that if they do get a true point guard in here, people are going to see how good the team can be with a true point guard, and that's going to make Ben Simmons and his camp unhappy because they want him to be a point guard. He likes handling the ball. You know who else likes handling the ball? Everybody likes handling the ball. Everybody wants to play point guard their whole life. Like everybody wants to play shortstop and everybody wants to play center field and pitch. But, you know, it's a very, very difficult skill to develop. He was a power forward in college. He played point guard when he was a kid. He was a power forward in college. He took a year off to heal, and then all of a sudden he's an NBA point guard? No, he's not. And it's not his fault, and he's doing the best he can and whatnot. But it is what it is. It's just, it's frustrating to me. I don't really care if this team wins or loses, but I do like seeing good basketball being played. You can't play good basketball night in and night out without a guy who understands how to run a basketball team. And Ben Simmons, with no perimeter game and with his, you know, two steps into the lane, jump pass backward stuff, that's not how you run a railroad. And every good defensive team in the league will continue to take advantage of those two deficiencies. And now he's hurt, and you didn't have a real point guard on your roster, so you didn't hurt his feelings.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, with Ben, I think it's Brett Brown realizes that, you know, we need to take the ball out of Ben's hands at times for the things that you said. And when you look at it, you know, when Ben is typically playing in the high post and he makes that, you know, what they do is he doesn't make the first pass. You know, the first guy comes in, they pass the ball to Ben in the high post, and he'll see someone cutting and he gets the ball to him or someone spotting up. That's when he's effective, in my opinion, lately, you know, in the half-court offense.
You know why? Because he's playing forward.
Well, exactly. So, so the thing is, they, like, I think they realize that you got to get someone in here. Now, the problem is, it's like, you know, right now, if you're looking at it in the playoffs, you're saying, here we go again. Now, you look at T.J. McConnell, that's a guy who they said, oh, all right, see you. You know, and now you're looking at it, maybe T.J. could help him right now.
T.J.'s a defensive deficiency. So is Tobias. So is Furkan. So you can't have two defensive deficiencies on the court at the same time. The way the East is constructed, the top three teams in the East, Milwaukee, Toronto, and Miami, are so streamlined at this point that they will find the weakness and exploit it. And it's not like just a weakness. It's a huge deficit those three guys bring. You know, T.J., Furkan, and Tobias, unfortunately.
And I think T.J. a little bit better than what people give him credit for, because in Indiana, he's playing well.
He's not. The reason T.J. didn't play in the last two playoffs is because he can't defend against a playoff team. He's a target. And you can have a T.J., but you can't have a T.J. and a J.J. on the floor at the same time. You can't have a T.J. and a Tobias on the floor at the same time. Because you can compensate for one, but you can't compensate for both, in my opinion, you know? And I don't think T.J.'s that good to begin with. I mean, T.J. is not going to draw a defense out either, you know?
Yeah, but here's the one thing.
So you're only taking who won
that game when they – I mean, I'm just saying this. When they played Boston 2 years ago and it went to five games, mm-hmm. T.J. won game four for them.
And lost game five.
Yeah.
He is what he is,
but he's an undrafted guy who basically willed his way onto an NBA roster. You know, that I mean that's what
the reason
he is.
TJ's in the NBA is because Sam Hinkie wanted to tank, and they just happened to have a roster spot that nobody else could fill, and he didn't cost any money. You know, and Brett Brown did a great job turning T.J. McConnell into an NBA player. And he's done a very good job turning Ben Simmons into an NBA point guard. He's a good developmental coach. I don't think anybody's going to argue that. And he hires good developmental coaches. And they, you know, sort of polish them to a certain degree.
Yeah.
But, you can't turn T.J.
But, okay, let me ask you a question. Who do you have here that's better than T.J.? As a point guard, who do you have?
All of their options right now, soup to nuts, are better than T.J.
Because you think
T.J.
so?
Is such. Oh yeah, Shake's better than T.J. Jason Richardson as the sort of the understudy point guard is better than T.J. because they give you something somewhere else. They give you some. They're either tall or they can shoot a little bit better, or they're good defenders, or they're at least bigger defenders. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. There's soup to nuts. They're better than T.J. They're more valuable than T.J. in this paradigm. And what do we have now? 24 games left? 25 games left?
Yeah, 25. Let me go in this commercial break, and then we'll come back and continue this. Right back. All right. So go ahead. You were saying we've got 25 games left?
So we got 25 games left, which is, you know, it's almost a third of the season. I don't have a whole lot of faith that their backcourt issues are going to be resolved. But another blessing in disguise could be the absence of Ben Simmons. So they do have to develop somebody to play point guard besides Ben Simmons. You know, it's kind of fascinating to me that they're in a situation where I don't care what team you're on, I don't care who's on your team, the most important person is the person who initiates everything. You can't play basketball if you don't have an initiator. And, you know, at this point, last year, Jimmy Butler was the secondary initiator. He was the backup initiator behind Ben. This year, they thought Jay Rich was going to be. And he says he's proven inept at it. And, you know, I guess it has to be, you know, Shake Milton getting serious minutes if Ben is really hurt. And, you know, Shake Milton, I think he had 17 points tonight. He played a pretty decent game in a reserve role, and he's getting a little bit better. And if you remember in the preseason, a couple of times we were looking at Shake Milton. Brett Brown said, you know, he is one of the guys that we hope can be a backup point guard for us. And we have a third of the season left. So, you know, they're sort of pot committed. And this is one of the big issues with this team. They're just so cocksure. They're so certain that things aren't going to change. that they seldom give themselves any sort of safety net. You know, the last two seasons, they've had to make huge changes to their rotation at the trading deadline, which is ridiculous because they had plenty of cap space, plenty of assets going into the season. You know, you add Bellinelli and Ersan and put them in your rotation, heavy in your rotation in 2017-18, and then 2018-19, you add Tobias, who you then give a max deal to. That's a huge miscalculation on the front end of the deal.
I don't know, you had to give Tobias a max deal.
No. What I'm saying is they're going into these seasons undermanned.
Yeah.
And at the trade deadline, you're making huge changes to pretty good teams already. So that's more an indictment on the front end of the season than the back end. Now, I'm not saying they shouldn't have given Tobias a deal. You know, we can have an entire podcast on whether he's worth the money he got.
Yeah.
But the point is, they had to add him this time last year. They've done the same thing with Alec Burks and Glenn Robinson Jr., the third, who got tons of minutes tonight. Glenn Robinson the third is starting. You know, and Al Horford is not. Again, a huge miscalculation at the front end of the year.
Yeah.
And good teams don't do that.
Yeah. But so what do they do? What do they do to correct this?
They don't. They are who they are at this point. You hope Shake Milton is better than he has been so far. You hope Jay Rich is better than he has been so far. But that's pretty much it. The real question is this team better without Horford starting if Ben Simmons doesn't start long term? That's the issue. You got a $100 million guy sitting on the bench if Ben Simmons is healthy. Does that guy still sit on the bench if Ben Simmons? You're going to start Shake Milton or Raul Neto over Al Horford?
I think they will. I mean, and the reason being is because Al Horford, see, here's the problem, and we'll talk about this, but Al Horford has to play in the playoffs because he's one of the best players on the team. I mean, and people could say what they want about him, but he's still one of the best players on the team. The problem is that, and you got to figure this out. You got to figure out a way of getting him and Embiid playing together better. Because when Horford was playing with Simmons, they didn't have problems. It's but it's the problem is when Embiid and Horford is on the floor together.
Well, here's the issue: we don't know if Embiid and Horford can't play together if Ben's not on the floor. We haven't been in that world yet. You know, maybe having three guys who are sort of, you know, road graders in the half court. I mean, Ben's a sports car in transition, but he's a, you know, the ball dies when it comes to him in the half court. Maybe having three of those guys is too much. Maybe Horford and Bede can play together if Ben's not also on the court, because all of a sudden, you've got a guy. Whoever Ben is replaced by, that guy has to respect. His defender has to respect that player's perimeter game more so than Ben's, because Ben has no perimeter game. So maybe they can coexist better if there is no Ben.
Yeah, I guess.
We may or may not find out.
We may or may not find out. You know, I'm saying, yeah.
You never know.
You can't assume. Yeah, you can't assume.
And the other thing is, you've got a general manager in Elton Brand who wants to show you how smart he is in his first full season as, like, full power GM. So is he going to want Brett Brown? You know, he just made two moves at the deadline. Isn't he going to want to give those guys their opportunity more than Al Horford, who clearly doesn't fit, even though Al Horford's his guy too? I mean, it's a weird... The Sixers are always a mess. They are a mess going into the playoffs the last couple of years. They've been a mess in the offseason. They've had to get rid of two general managers, and they've replaced them. Their third general manager is a guy who's never been a general manager before and really never had anybody to learn from. So, you know, that brings us to this point where you're hoping that Shake Milton and Jay Rich can give you some minutes at point guard if, in fact, Ben is, you know, out long term.
What about Alec Burks?
I don't know.
Alec Burks.
If you are defending the Sixers and Alec Burks is their point guard, are you worried about the offense running properly? Are you worried about anything besides Alec Burks coming off a high screen roll? I mean, you take so many things out of an offense that's predicated on having a big point guard who's able to make crisp, sharp entry passes, who is a pass-first point guard. Does the offense work with him, and do you have to change the offense? Brett Brown told us today that Alec Burke has two plays in the playbook for himself right now. They got a game on Monday, and then they can play the Clippers and the Lakers.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just don't see Alec Burke as being anything more in the, you know, especially in the short term before they get all these easy games coming up, which we'll talk about later. I don't see him being anything more than offense off the bench. And I think his stats were kind of inflated, you know, out west because, you know, look who he's playing with. Somebody's got to shoot. It's like Embiid's rebounding total sometimes. He's the guy standing there and he's the biggest guy. It's not like necessarily he fought for those 17 rebounds.
You know? Yeah, you're right. Well, look, we're going to pay some bills with some commercials and we'll be right back. All right, now in regards to what we talked about, you know, the schedule and all this and that. Now listen, the Sixers lost last night. It was their sixth consecutive road loss. I believe it's something like 12 out of the last 14 games that they lost on the road. They lost 12 of their last 14 road games. And they dropped to 9-20. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, someone's saying to me, a guy asked me and says, should we make a big deal out of this? Should we make a big deal out of the Sixers being in fifth place in the Eastern Conference, you know, with a record of 35-22? And when can we find out if these new additions are how good they are? And I told the guy, and I stand by this, the Sixers are still going to win games just because their schedule is so easy. I mean, last night they lost to the Milwaukee Bucks, who at 48-8 have the league's best record. They've been the league's best team throughout the season. So with that being said, you know, a team like the Sixers who struggle on the road, you didn't expect them to come in here and get a win, not against the Bucks. But at the same time, I do expect the Sixers to move up the standings and possibly get a third or fourth seed, and we won't figure out how good they are until they go in the playoffs.
Well, a couple things about that. I agree that they're going to move up in the standings and they'll have at least a first round home court advantage. I believe they'll be a four, if not a three. It depends on what happens with everybody else. The Sixers have lost 12 of 14, you said. 12 of their last 14 on the road. I believe they've had their full squad for maybe four of those 14 games, including the last four in a row that they lost on the road. Their full squad, everybody healthy. And tonight's game with Ben Simmons out after the first 5 minutes. If you take that away, they're 7-8 on the road before the last 12 of 14, before the last 14 games. So, when they're at their best, they're a 500 road team, which is fine. I'm not saying that they need to reach the playoffs to find out what kind of road team they are, what kind of team they are. They just need to have the whole starting five together. And that's just not been the case. We were talking about Al Horford being benched. And when should Brett Brown have benched Al Horford? Well, the first game that the Sixers played with both Joel Embiid and Josh Richardson, where the conversation made sense to bench Al Horford, was the first game he was benched. It was on Thursday against the Nets. That's the first time Josh Richardson could come back. So that said, the team's principles have been injured an inordinate amount of time, and there's very little depth. That was kind of the issue with this roster going into the season. You were hoping that James Ennis, who's no longer with the team, Mike Scott, who's no longer in the rotation, and Trey Burke, who's no longer with the team, could provide them with, you know, offense, two-way defense, playing two or three positions. You were hoping that those guys could do that, and you were wrong. And most of the league was right, because most of the league didn't think that those guys were necessarily the answer, were necessarily depth, and none of them have proven to be depth. So that said, you know, we talked about, okay, when could they bench Al Horford? It's the same conversation. When will we know who the Sixers are? We'll know who the Sixers are if and when everybody's ever healthy altogether.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, that's a huge point. And especially, you know, here's the thing. We spoke to Embiid after the game. And, you know, everyone keeps saying, you know, we like the way we played with energy. And when you look at it, you know, you figure that as bad as they shot a season worst 35% from the field. You know, Giannis, you know, they went away from the way they were defending Giannis. They didn't have a crowd like they were supposed to. Embiid gets into foul trouble. Ben Simmons goes down. And something tells you that, you know, before, you know, Marcus, when I was on the road and I would come to games and I would see them lose, and it looked like a team that didn't have any answers. Right now, it looks like a team that's, dang, we're beating ourselves a little bit.
Well, in certain sense. I will say this. Giannis hit a couple. I think he hit a three and he hit a mid-range shot. And then Joel Embiid shut him down. I mean, my job tonight was to watch the quote-unquote greatest player in the world, as he called himself, the best player in the world, see how he played. And there were some keys on the board and in the video room, or in the video that runs in the locker room, you know, points of emphasis in defending Giannis. He did a spectacular job after the first 5 minutes of the game through the first half in hitting all of those keys. I mean, Giannis loves to go back to his right. He hit Joel Embiid in the chest twice because Joel Embiid anticipated that properly. Now, in the fourth quarter, he went to his left a couple times. Giannis is the MVP for a reason. He can adapt. He's a spectacular athlete. But to your point, this is not the same team losing road games badly because they're lost as much as it is a team that continues to lose road games because they're not quite complete. I think they've made lots of steps. They're in the right place. I mean, one of the things that kind of went unnoticed today is, I believe, Glenn Robinson III had 5 steals. That's unbelievable. I mean, 5, and he got some of his steals in garbage time against their backup players, but 5 steals from, you know, a guy you hoped would, you know, give you, what, 17 minutes a game, 19 minutes a game at the most. Now he's in a starting lineup. He's giving you 5 steals, and, you know, he was the only guy, he was the only starter who wasn't a minus tonight, which, again, comes partly, you know, because he played against the backups at the end. But he had a good game. I mean, this is a compelling team on a lot of different levels. But, you know, as we talked in one of the previous segments, you know, if they don't have a point guard, it's all moot because they didn't have a chance. They played great without Ben in the second half of the first quarter and the second quarter, but they didn't have a chance. Joel Embiid picked up 2 fouls in the first 46 seconds of the second half. And at that point, there was no one to stop Giannis. You know, you can't ask Al Horford to stop Giannis. You can't ask anybody but Ben and Joel to stop Giannis. And that's
Ben ain't stopping Giannis. I love Ben, but he ain't stopping Giannis.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's your only chance. Those two guys.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, so I mean, you're right. You're right. But you know, Giannis still had a heck of a game. Embiid does a good job. I mean, I think the fact that, you know, it's funny, like a lot of people try to play those guys against each other. They're friends. They're
good friends.
No. Giannis and Joel.
Oh, yeah,
like, yeah, and they're friends. You know, they're good friends. I mean, think about it. Giannis picked Joel over Kawhi in the All-Star game, first overall. You know what I mean? That's his buddy.
Yeah.
But a lot of people do it. So basically, when you're going up against your friend, it's like is some people think it's a love fest, but nah. Sometimes it could be.
It's much harsher.
It's harsher.
Like, if you go up against a guy you hate, you want to beat him.
Yeah.
you go up a guy against a guy you love, it's the only thing that matters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're going to talk about this summer at the barbecue. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? This and that.
Especially, one guy beat the other guy's butt on Christmas Day. Yeah. In the biggest regular season game either of them in that point of their careers.
He's like, who's your daddy? Mm-hmm. I am. But, yeah, now the one thing I do think, this is one thing that we're about to get out for here. You got a flight to catch soon. The one thing that we disagree on. Mm-hmm. I think that they need to go out there and get a point guard.
Oh, I don't disagree with you. I don't think they could get one that can help them.
Yeah, okay.
It'd be great, in theory, to have improved backcourt play. But that's the other thing, man. I mean, you get that. So say they get the backcourt guy. Ben misses 6 games. They go 5-1. What then?
Yeah. Yeah, you got a point, but you got a problem, but I mean, I don't know.
The biggest issue with this team for the last 3 years has been their point guard.
Yeah.
Whether he's going to develop quickly enough, whether he's going to make the right decisions. You know, they made the playoffs his first year. He was awful against Boston. He was bad. But he's a rookie, and he's a power forward. So, then last year, again, limited deficiencies. This year against the best teams, limited deficiencies, especially when it's not just his show. So you bring a guy in here, and they go 5-1, and the coach might get fired at the end of the year, and the GM might get fired at the end of the year. You know, it'd be great drama for us to sort of see how guys are used. You know, you have Ben bring the ball up the first 2 possessions, and then no more for the rest of the game, just for the optics of it. It'd be great drama, but there's a reason they don't have a point guard.
Yeah, you're right. Very insightful. But I think they have to do it. I mean, I get it. I get what you're saying. But I think right now, I would hope to agree. I mean, I would hope that you're wrong, and I would hope to not agree with you. That's what I'm trying to say, because, right now, let's face it, not having a backup point guard, a real backup point guard, and no offense to Shake. Shake was a point guard all throughout his career. They tried to turn him into a 2 guard. Mm-hmm. No offense to Josh. Josh was a point guard in his last year in college. He came in the league as a backup point guard. No offense to Neto, no offense to Alec, no offense to any of them. But, you need a strong veteran backup point guard that's a point guard in order to win. And right now we're talking about the coach's job is on the line. And you're also talking about a couple other things. Now, the one thing that I've learned and I was told, there were a couple point guards that they wanted to go after in free agency as the backup. But the problem is they got outpriced. Like, they spent all this money on all these Al Horford and Tobias and this Ben's and that. Extension. Yeah, Ben's extension. But see, that doesn't kick in until next year.
Right.
But the thing is, it's like to a point. Now, don't get me wrong. They could have probably paid like some extra money or whatever. But the problem is, it's like, do you want to come to the Sixers, or do you want to go somewhere else and probably get $7 million, mm-hmm. as opposed to getting a mid-level exception or the minimum? You know what I mean? So that's part of the problem, that they weren't unable to do that. Mm-hmm. And then also, you're going to go there as a backup, and you're going to continue to be the backup. So
behind one of the healthiest guys in the league, a young guy in the league, and where's your stability? Is the coach going to be there the next year? You both of your young stars have developmental issues, and the superstar, you don't know if he's going to be in shape. You don't know if he's going to play. Yeah. So there's so little stability in the organization you're joining that, if you have other options, those other options are amplified or magnified or enhanced compared to the option that the Sixers are. The Sixers, you know, they the biggest fallacy since the end of the 2017-18 season when they lost to Boston. If you remember that end-of-season press conference, Brian Colangelo, who's no longer with the team, and Brett Brown, just heart. This is a destination franchise. Guys are going to want to come here. That, to me, was ridiculous. You've got a head coach who's, you know, done nothing except guide tankers and lose to Brad Stevens. You got a general manager who's the only reason he got his job at that point was because his daddy had to take over a team from another general manager who was a wacko. And you've got a point guard in Ben Simmons who played power forward in college 2 years ago and didn't have the year. You know, you don't know what he is or who. All you know is in, what was it, game three against Boston, he put the shot back up so quick because he didn't want to get fouled. And they lost that game. And you've got a center who's missed time in every season to that point, significant time in every season at that point, you know, four seasons into his career. Why was this a destination franchise? You know, it was like there was a marketing campaign, a departure from reality. Because this has never been a destination franchise.
Yeah, look, bro, all I know is I can tell you one thing from that. You didn't trust the process.
Why would I? The process was always a fraud.
I know, I'm just saying that because the way you broke it all the way down.
You know, with the beginning of the process, when they told us what it was, I said, okay, that's a 7 to 10 year plan if everything goes great. Well, what do you mean? Well, you're going to miss on draft picks, guys are going to get hurt, and the losing is going to be so toxic that it's going to take time to learn how to win. And you're probably not going to have the same coach at the end, so you're going to have to reboot it at least once. So here we are in year 7. Nobody's picking them to win it all, you know? And how close are they next year with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving back, you know?
Yeah, it's going to be tougher.
I mean, you expect things to stay static, but things don't stay static.
Mm-mm. Not at all. Not at all. Well, look, bruh, it's time for us to get out of here. I want to thank y'all for listening. And I'm sorry if you heard the cell phone going off. That was someone calling me. I apologize about that. I should have had my cell phone on mute.
Well, you know, you can't put it on. You can't. You got it. It might have been important.
Yeah. So
most of the time it is, right?
Yeah, most of it is. But now we both have these flights to get, and we'll talk to y'all later on. I'll be back tomorrow. All right, peace.